Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Hubert Knight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And today on the show, we're talking about how fixed is a fixed price contract. Now, boy, oh boy, there has been a lot in the media recently. And I actually saw one on Radio New Zealand, Andrew, where the headline was new builds, quote, absolutely not recommended for first home buyers. Now, the reason that we're seeing a lot of comment in the media about buyers being unhappy, that's both first home buyers and investors being unhappy with purchasing new builds at the moment, is that there's a lot of developer cost inflation. So the cost of building properties is going up. We're seeing the price of bricks going up, the price of timber going up. That's causing developers and primarily builders actually to increase the price of fixed price contracts. So it sounds like those fixed price contracts aren't as fixed as we perhaps thought they were. Now, what we're going to do in today's episode is we're going to go through when that might occur. We're going to talk about the contracts that allow that to happen. And we're going to go through what you need to know as an investor in order to be able to respond to this and how much this is actually going to affect you. So I want to start off by disclosing that there are two types of contracts that we have for new builds here in New Zealand. We use the progressive payments model and then the turnkey contract. And these two are quite different. Andrew, I know we've talked about it on the show before, but just for anybody who's new, can you just explain to us the differences between those two types of contracts?
Yeah, sure. So a progressive payment contract is a traditional build. So that's where you'll do is you'll agree to buy the land if you don't own that already. So that's done normally by a standard Auckland District Law Society contract. So you buy the land yourself, that's in your name, and then you make progressive payments to the builder as the build occurs. And so you might have a build of, let's say, $500,000, and you might have five installments, all of $100,000. And so then when the builder meets these certain milestones, you'll advance more money to them for the work that they've done. Now, some of those build contracts hugely favor the builder, and banks hate these type of contracts because it might be that you've paid them more money than what they've done, and then that helps their cash flow, but it means that the bank doesn't really have enough security to cover themselves until they've got a finished house. The contracts that the banks favour more is when you're paying for exactly the amount of work as it's being done. Builders hate them because they're only getting the money, you know, if there's delays with the bank, they're getting the money after the fact. And so it can be a little bit harder from a cash flow perspective from theirs. But a standard turnkey contract, generally speaking, that's a standard Auckland District Law Society contract where you're buying a finished property that's not finished today. So what that means is you're saying, I agree to pay $750,000 for this house when it's finished. And then anything that happens during the construction is up to the builder.
Now, what's really interesting is when you read a lot of the articles online, it's quite hard to really understand the situation because it's often not disclosed which sort of contract that's being used. So for instance, in the Radio New Zealand article I just referenced, it was a first home buyer who had purchased a property or signed up a contract for $545,000. Now, in their situation, the cost that they've had to pay has gone up by 7K. So it's gone up to 552K, which in terms of price is not that much. But if you're young and you've potentially got limited borrowing, then that might really concern you. The other thing in this specific situation is, of course, if the price goes above 552K, then perhaps they're over that price cap limit for the Home Start grant. And if they were going to use some of the Home Start grant, that free money from the government, in order to purchase that property, using that as part of their deposit, then potentially they don't have access to that anymore. But what's not disclosed in these sorts of articles, though, which is the really tough thing, is were they using the progressive payments model? So they were using a build contract where prices are able to go up, or were they using a turnkey contract where there's much, much less flexibility? Now, just in terms of some other examples that I've read about in the news over the last week, I saw that Bruce Patton, a mortgage broker from Loan Market in Auckland, was saying that one of his clients recently had the build price go up $25,000 on the original purchase price for what he considered a modest Christchurch property, and the build hasn't even started yet. But are you saying, Andrew, that you believe that most of these examples are probably more on the progressive payments contract, so where there is a build contract, as opposed to a turnkey contract?
I think most of them are because there's more provisions for price increases. And historically, you would have said that a turnkey contract is exactly that, you know, it is completely fixed. Having said that, my good friend Tony Mounts rang me this morning and he said, I need to check something with you. I have a person who's bought a property and they've signed a turnkey contract and they've paid a deposit. That price cannot go up, can it? And I said, yes, it can, because we're seeing more and more instances where developers are using mechanisms to get out of contracts or increase prices. And it's always been there. They're just not things that are being executed a lot. And I would say that I'm probably fielding at least a couple of conversations a week from developers at the moment around exactly this issue. Just before recording this, I was on the phone to a very big developer in Auckland. They specialize in first home sales. And so he sold a whole lot of properties to first home buyers. He's looking at the project. And at the moment, he said, I'm $2 million negative on this project because of the price increases. What the hell do I do? And so he's trying to find ways that he can deliver that project because, let's face it, at $2 million, he has to cancel all the contracts and let everyone know that he can't deliver it. But it's better for him to go away and work out, well, what is going to work for everyone?
Well, I think it's important, just before we get into the mechanisms where developers are able to increase prices using turnkey contracts, to come back and talk about, well, what's being talked about in a lot of these articles. So if you've seen them online, what mechanism are developers or primarily just normal builders doing in order to increase those prices? And it's what's called escalation clauses or fluctuation clauses. And these allow for any cost increases to be passed on by the builder to the purchaser. So for instance, here's an example of a clause you might find within a contract. So quote, the original contract price shall be adjusted for any increase in the cost of subcontractors or materials that could not reasonably have been foreseen by the builder at the time the contract is signed. So that one is from the certified builder's contract, and we'll talk about different types of contracts in a second, but that's where any increase in the cost of materials, the builder can pass those on even if there was a fixed price agreed or an original contract price agreed before that contract was signed.
Now, I'm going to come back to turnkey contracts later on because they're a bit different, and, you know, to be fair, I consider those to be, you know, locked in, but there are some outs as we're discovering more and more of at the moment. But the three main types of contracts, the progressive payment build contracts, the traditional build contracts, there are three main types in New Zealand. You have a standard New Zealand build contract. You can have a New Zealand certified builder's contract. And then, of course, the old favorite brand master build, which may not be your favorite after this. So those are your three standards. And each of them allows for a different level of price increases. It has different terms and conditions. So we're going to cover these off one at a time. Ed, do you want to kick it off with the standard New Zealand contract?
Cool. So this one comes from Standards NZ, which is actually a government organization. And my understanding is that it's one of the most widely used. And this is where the contract price, there's what's called the contract price, which is just a lump sum, a fixed figure that's specified within the contract. And that may be within a sort of pricing schedule as well. But it does allow for some level of adjustment. And this comes under clause 12.8 for anybody who is a real nerd and wants to go check it out. And it's under what's called cost fluctuations. Now, this is a little bit different from some of the other contracts, which we'll hear about in a second, because the increase that a builder is allowed to pass on is based on an equation. And that relies primarily on Stats NZ, on the labor cost index and the producer's price index. So let's say that the developer has personally faced a 5% increase in costs, but the equation says, oh, well, according to the Stats New Zealand indexes, there's only a 3% increase in costs. Well, in this contract, the increase they're allowed to pass on is based on the Statistics New Zealand costs rather than what they themselves have actually experienced. So it's worked out based on a formula and it's based on market data rather than what the builder themselves has experienced. That's quite different from some of the other contracts which we'll discuss, like the New Zealand Certified Builders contract. Right, Andrew?
Correct. Just to cover off the certified builders, this is an interesting one because you will have an original fixed price, but then you have a final contract price. And you think, well, if it's fixed, how can you have a final one that differs? But often they will. And that's because you can have adjustments to the original fixed price. The thing that's different here from the standards one is that you actually can pass on as the builder the actual price difference. So for example, if your timber goes up by 8% and that's higher than what's in the benchmarks, you can pass on that actual cost to the purchaser. But there are three requirements that the builder has to meet, and they're really interesting. Number one, the builder must have not been able to reasonably foresee such increase in costs, which is interesting because in this environment, you wonder how could you not foresee price increases. But, you know, maybe again, you know, it might be fair to say, okay, well, we're expecting a 4% increase and it's actually been 10. So therefore, that's unforeseen. That will become the challenge for probably the lawyers. Number two, the increase in costs may actually erode the builder's margin. And I was thinking about this because in what world would you have a price increase that wouldn't erode the builder's margin? I wonder whether or not there's an inflation figure that you use by default in your build contract. And the third point is the builder must be able to substantiate the increase by reference to the original pricing and the subsequent price increase. So again, they've got to have that broken down. So they can't just say, okay, well, the price is 500,000 and we've had a price increase on timber of 5%. They have to be able to show that there was X amount in for timber and those prices actually genuinely have gone up. So a bit more wiggle room, I guess, for the builder here. But they still have to meet some conditions to be able to pass those costs on. Final one is master build. Ed, do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, now the one that is the easiest to increase the price on is the master build contract. And it's interesting to see that in a recent construction webinar, the CEO, I believe it was, of master build, was saying to builders, do not remove these clauses, or it is too risky to remove these clauses from contracts at the moment because costs are going up. So if the builder suffers any additional costs, then they can pass on an adjustment. And under a master build contract, there is actually no requirement for the builder to provide any evidence of before and after costs. So they can pretty much unilaterally, on their own, without any reference to evidence, pass on an increase in costs to you, and you kind of just have to take it under the master build contract. And so somebody was saying to me today, Andrew, oh, the devil's in the detail, isn't it? And I think that that's just a bit too cliche. I think what it really is that the quality is in the contract. So the quality of your rights as an investor is definitely in the wording of the contract. And this is the sort of thing which is quite hard to appreciate until you're really far down into your investment decision and making a hard decision where you start to appreciate the differences in the quality.
And what I found really fascinating when we actually compared these all side by side is that Master Build, which is probably the most recognized brand in New Zealand, the number of people that I hear say, I want a Master Build builder, that's great when it's turnkey and you've got the Master Build guarantee. But during the construction phase of a master build contract, you're probably at the greatest amount of risk from those price increases. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't build with a master build builder. I'm sure there's lots of other provisions that work to your favor. But in this instance, probably what I would consider the more favored option for most people, just purely from a branding perspective, is the worst.
Absolutely, in this instance. And one of the things that's interesting, Andrew, is as soon as I started reading these articles, I jumped into our old files and started reading our contracts, and I was trying to find these escalation clauses, but I wasn't able to find any.
Yeah. Now, that's because generally speaking, we only offer what's called turnkey contracts. So you're buying a finished property that's not finished. So you're buying a completed property from a developer. You're not making progressive payments. You're not essentially signing a build contract. It is yet to be built. So that's where it can get a bit confusing for people. But you're not actually building a property. A developer is building it and you're buying a finished product. So generally speaking, there isn't so much wiggle room for a developer to change. What I am finding at the moment is that developers are struggling to meet their obligation under a contract to finish at a particular price. And so what we're seeing is developers will come back and say, I'm going to give an example, a real life example of a big project that I was involved in this happening recently. So there were about 100 units in the development, and of that, Opus represented about a third of those investors and first home buyers. Now, the developer, who is a very experienced developer, has been waiting on on resource consent for the past 12 months. Now, the resource consent should have taken about 3 months to 6 months. It's taken a year. In that last year, the cost of construction for that project has gone up $6.5 million, about $65,000 per unit. And so he rang me up and said, it just doesn't work. His contract with any buyer was subject to resource consent and a certain number of sales. Because resource consent hadn't come out, the contract was unconditional from a purchaser standpoint, but not the developer standpoint. And this is what Tony Mounts was asking me today, in essence. Can a developer get out of a contract? Now, in that case, absolutely. The developer, and I'm not going to name them, said, hey, look, I just can't make this work. So therefore, my only option really is to either put up the price or cancel the contracts. And at $65,000 a unit, and when probably the market has gone up $100,000, if they were an unscrupulous developer, all they would have done was write to the other side's lawyers and said, hey, look, I'm sorry, but resource consent hasn't come out. We cancel the contract. Here's your deposit back with the interest because it's in a trust account. And then they'd go back to the market. All those properties would have another $100,000 on them. And I have no doubt that those properties would sell. I spoke to this developer at length because obviously I had, say, 35 investors and first home buyers who would have been drastically affected by the fact that then they have to go to the market and find something else. And so I didn't want that to happen. In this case, having the power of leverage through Opus, I was able to negotiate, they look at a price increase that wasn't the full $65,000. What actually eventuated is they offered a blanket price increase of $25,000 per unit, and he absorbed $40,000 of the price increase. Of my investors, two people said it didn't work for them, which is absolutely fine. And the rest of them said, hey, look, we accept that. Rent's gone up. I genuinely think the rental increase is going to cover more than the interest on the extra $25,000 that you're borrowing from the bank. But that meant that people were faced with one of two options. Either they had to sign off on a $25,000 increase, or get their deposit back. Now, the two people that got their deposit back are going to buy something a bit more affordable just because of their changes in circumstances. The rest of the people signed off a $25,000 price increase that will kick in when the property settles in 12 months' time, when the units are complete. But that was an instance where these were turnkey contracts completely locked in from the purchaser's standpoint because they'd all paid deposits, but the developer still had some wiggle rooms. And some other things that you might find in a contract that allow developers to get out would be sometimes they'll have a clause in there if they've got to change the size of the units because resource consent comes back and the council say, hey, look, we're not happy with the size. Building consent, sometimes percentage of sales or subdivision or something else.
And I think it's important to weigh up those benefits and the risks of going down the new build route, if that is what you're going to do and the right strategy for you, because the investors can feel good because, sweet, the value of that property has gone up. So, sweet, we've made some money. But actually, we didn't get the full increase we would have otherwise gone because the price of that property has also gone up. Now, there are reasons for that, and you can weigh these up, but it's something you've got to be aware of and kind of go in with your eyes wide open, because where we start to hear complaints is if people purchase a product and then they find out after the fact that there were risks that they weren't fully aware of. And so it is important to talk through with your lawyer about these as well and fully understand them.
One thing I do want to say, though, is there will be developers that take advantage of people in this market as things go up, but there are some good developers, as I say, that we've been working with that are suffering these price increases, and we do want our developers to have enough margin to finish a product, because there's nothing worse than getting to 95% complete and then the developer going under.
Oh, Andrew, you sound like a dirty developer now. Now, look, let's wrap it up there, but please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, what a read a review for you. This one comes from Almost Marigold. It says, answers the tricky questions. It's a 5-star review. Such a great resource. Thank you. Smiley face. Hey, we really appreciate you taking that time to leave us a review, because that really does help us get the message out to more people. Make sure you tune in tomorrow as well. We're going to dig into the responsible lending code. And why don't you come along to our next webinar? It's happening next Tuesday, the 21st of September. And this is where we're going to teach you how to grow a portfolio and plan it out over the long term. Link in the show notes if you want to come along to that, or go to opuspartners.co.nz/webinar. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Edward Knight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.